Welcome to Inspiring on BBS Radio. I'm your host, Jeanette Bryan. I'm sure many noticed that we did not do a show two Saturdays ago. I had to take care of a family matter, and now that I got a handle on that, me and Susan Ross are back on air to talk to you about seasonal and environmental allergies in children. There is never a day that goes by without someone asking me if it is possible to have allergies during winter season. If you have heard of perennial allergies, then you know this is one that happens year-long, regardless of season. We will be elaborating more on that subject coming up. If you are just tuning in, you are listening to Inspiring, please feel free to call us using the call-in information that appears on BBS Internet Radio homepage and share your viewpoints. Hello, Susan. How are you today, my friend?
Oh, I'm very well, Jeanette. How are you doing?
I am doing great. I am delighted to have you with me as we navigate the topic on allergies. Susan, before we start touching on our topic here, let me share something with you and our listeners. I came across a study conducted by doctors at Long Island College Hospital in New York City that shows seasonal allergies affect ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, in children. The study involved 20 children between the ages of 5 and 18, all of whom had been diagnosed with ADHD, but only two had been evaluated for allergy problems, even though all had a family history of allergies. So the researchers screened the children for allergic rhinitis, using not only a focused personal and family history, but also blood and other types of allergy testing for mold, cockroaches, dogs, cats, feathers, ragweed, trees, and grass. The results show that 8 of the children, 40%, were diagnosed with asthma or atopic dermatitis, 3, 23% with allergic rhinitis, and 9, 69% had at least one positive allergy test. 15 of the 20 also had a history of at least two allergic symptoms. So based on these findings, the researcher concluded that a high percentage of children with ADHD may also harbor allergies, and some of the behavioral patterns observed in ADHD might come from sleep problems caused by allergic symptoms, particularly nasal obstruction. It was then suggested that all diagnosed children with ADHD should also be tested for seasonal or environmental allergies, and that treatment might improve their overall behaviors and symptoms. I wanted to share this because we spoke previously on this show about ADHD, and because of the nature of today's topic on allergies, I found appropriate to bring this information to parents' attention. Susan, before we start our topic today, what are your thoughts on that correlation between allergies and increased symptoms on ADHD in children?
Okay, Jeanette, my thoughts on this is that the researchers are probably very, very correct, and I would never try and discount their research because I know the extent that they would probably have to undergo to do that. I would venture to say that I would add that a lot of parents who have a child with special needs, ADD, ADHD, they are very involved in their assessments, evaluations, treatments, and being able to look at this as potentially being one avenue that is contributing to their symptoms or their issues is very wise indeed. I really do think that we are making great strides in treating children, assessing and evaluating and treating children with ADD and ADHD. That it only would stand to say that we're going to be looking at both the medical side of that and the psychological or the behavioral side of that. So I think we're right on track.
Good. So as we make a distinction between seasonal and environmental allergies, I wanted to point that we will focus more on how allergies affect children's behavior and parents' decision to let the children engage in outdoor activities. So I will give the floor to Susan to tell us a little bit what seasonal allergies are.
Okay, well, there have been there's a lot of basic information that parents who are not knowledgeable in seasonal allergies can simply go to the web. And I advise parents to look at places that maybe hospital studies in their area, different organizations with the United States government that have been spending a considerable amount of time in doing various research. When you're looking at reputable sites online, that's the kind of where your starting place is. But at the same time, having said that, there is nothing that I can say that would be more important than take your child to your medical provider and let the provider assess your child. And that could be everything, including any type of behavioral issues that may or may not be linked to this. And I think with seasonal allergies, parents sometimes get the impression that seasonal allergies is just it's just something that comes up for a very short amount of time, and that in itself is true. But if a child has other issues before the trees started blooming and the grass starts growing, then we have to look at the whole package in order to be well-rounded. Seasonal allergies, then, you know, are an allergic reaction or some type of reaction in the child or the individual that is actually brought on or triggered by blooms and grass growing and different things that happen. And a lot of this, Jeanette, is the pollen. Pollen counts. I do not remember as a child my parents being extremely concerned about pollen counts. As time has progressed and we've become more knowledgeable, we are looking at all of the factors that contribute to that child's overall well-being. And so in pollen counts, if you have access to the Internet or anyone has access to the Internet, you can actually go in and locate your state or your location's pollen count. Pollen just simply is how plants will fertilize, and they carry their pollen is carried by the wind. So if you live in a place where it's very windy or the wind is kicking up quite a bit, it is a possibility that on those particular days when the pollen count is high, that children and parents are sensitive or symptomatic. Symptomatic, they have runny nose, they're stuffy, they're congested. And when a child is stuffy, congested, feels miserable, I'm inclined to think that that also contributes to they're not going to behave 100% like perfect little angels because they're not feeling well. Any one of us as adults who are not feeling well know that if we get underneath a symptom or something bad enough, that it really does take the wind out of our sail. We are not up to par that day, and we're not doing our very best. So if parents are aware that things change in their child at the onset of spring and the onset of things, all things blooming, and they have taken their child to a provider, a medical doctor, to have the child evaluated. There's another thing that's called compliance. If the doctor is recommending that your child maintain a certain medication regimen, that means take a certain medication every day or however the provider describes it, or prescribes it rather, then you need to be able to make sure that your child is getting the medications that they need during this season in order to help alleviate some of those symptoms. As pollen counts decrease with rain, we don't like to see rain. I hear adults complain about rain. But, you know, the reality of it is when it's raining, nothing is floating in the air. It decreases the pollen count. And it's almost like getting an off day, or symptoms are not as bad. I also know that there, in looking at the web and doing the research for this and looking at some of these things, parents may or may not have an idea that they have a child that's suffering. When I was growing up, it was simply, you know, it's sunshine, it's warm, go outside and play. But go outside and play could be playing in the dirt, running in the grass, laying in the grass, rolling in the grass, all kinds of things, picking flowers, all kinds of things. But now that we are so much more focused and so much more knowledgeable on the things that trigger problems in children and adults as well, the providers who have been looking at seasonal allergies in children, they actually advocate parents taking additional steps just to be aware of what is changing in your child. There is a really interesting study that I found, or an interesting notation that I found with the Children's Hospital in Boston, where children whose allergies and can be told apart, you know, like a parent should be able to pinpoint the difference between what is a common cold in a child and do they really have an allergy. So the specialist who wrote this particular article is sharing that if your child has what we would consider as adult cold symptoms, sneezing and sniffling and it's just lingering, and his eyes and nose are itching, well past a week, then we might want to have an awareness there that our child could be suffering from allergies. And I would say take your child to a provider and let them evaluate your child. I do know that when we were active duty and we were stationed in different places and the air quality was very, very poor, that the greater percent of the population, children and adults alike, were seeing allergists for shots. And
yes, definitely.
I used to be
an allergy technician. I used to give shots to people with allergies. I did that for close to 6 years, actually. Yeah.
So you probably can reflect back on that and to be able to see some of the symptoms that walk through your door, and for the extended amount of time that the child or the adult had it, then it warrants allergy testing. And allergy testing, you know, there are a lot of things. I will say there are a lot of things that parents want to spend money on or don't want to spend money on. And I don't know that that's the issue, but I'm just saying there are some things that's worth knowing. And if I had a child that was suffering and I couldn't really put my finger on what it was that was making my child so ill or making my child feel so bad, I would want to find out exactly what that was. And going in and having allergy testing done is something that's not maybe done by every single household for every child, but it is most definitely worth the money to find out exactly what my child is dealing with and how can I help them. And so you're probably very well versed in this, that after the allergy or allergies has been detected, that they want to re-stimulate or re-educate the immune system to be able to handle the exposure from these particular allergens. So an allergen, being what causes the allergy, we don't want to get it to the point where it's not important, it's not a big deal. They'll just hang tough, they'll hang out, because children, like I said, are very dependent on us taking care of them as adults. So getting them tested, finding out what they're allergic to, and then sticking with the regimen the doctor or the provider describes. If the provider is saying that your child is allergic to such, such, and such, and we do not take our part in making sure that we prevent those things or we give them their medications in the right dose, at the right time, for the right child, then we could potentially set our child up for problems in the future. An interesting point that you made is in the study is the linkage between parents who have allergies, or in the family tree there are people who have allergies, and the onset of new allergies in the child within the same family. That it is a possibility of having a heredity component, and that doesn't mean that the treatment or the avoidance of treatment in a old family tree member is the same that it should be for a new child. You know, we have so much more technology, so I don't see why we don't take advantage of it.
Well, we usually don't take advantage of it because or we don't want to, or we're ignorant of the fact that that technology is there for us to take advantage of. Being an allergy technician, Susan, I saw all sort of issues when it comes to testing your child. You have parents who are reluctant about having their child tested for allergies and not knowing if by testing their child that will solve the problems that they already had or that will make it worse. It was always a good time to educate and make them understand the reality of what the allergy is and what the child is going through versus knowing what is going on and going through the process and giving them shots. It also depended on the age of the child. We have different type of testing, and being able to work between an allergist, which he was just an allergist, an immunologist, and working with an ENT who also was doing allergy, and he has two different testing. They have two different testing methods and way of doing testing and the age range of doing those tests. So parents need to be aware of blood testing. When the child is very small, very, very small, there is no need to torture them and put them through the test of skin testing. They go and do a simple blood test, and they test them for everything. Test them from pollen, ragweed, all those little things. Even sometimes they even test them for food, just so that they can, you know, pinpoint and say it's just not environmental allergies. It also could be a possibility that it's food allergies. So after they go through that process of being tested, then they come in and review. They come find out that they have any allergies at all, then we put them through a regimen. And from that regimen, we can follow through and see, depending on the seasons, because some of the allergies, and as I was working there with Dr. Sullivan, I learned that they have something they call perennial allergy. Perennial allergy is something that happens, is an allergy that happens to you throughout the year. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that it's winter, it doesn't matter that it's fall, it doesn't matter that it's summer. It just happens when you have those allergies, you have those pollen allergies, and they are impacted also with the things that you have in your house, like dust, mite, and animal pet denders. So if you have those type of things at home, then you are more exposed of having those allergies, and you are more exposed of being running with all the issues of allergies that you will have. So you have that, and then you have the other type of allergy testing, where it's a skin testing. They start with an antihistamine, like a control, to control and see. That will be your baseline to this deciding factor of seeing the flaring up of the skin, and comparing it to the flaring up of that antihistamine to decide whether or not the person is allergic. So let's say that the antihistamine flares up, and then all those skin testing that you put on this person back, nothing happened, there is no reaction, then you determine the person is not allergic. And so the decision comes that you're not allergic to anything. You just probably have rhinitis, which you can have rhinitis without having an allergy. So, and then if they do a testing where you appear to have a couple of reactions that matches the baseline reaction of the antihistamine, then they go ahead, and they go ahead and decide what type of pollen is it that you're allergic to. And if they pinpoint, they will say, okay, you're allergic to ragweed and moss, or you're allergic to mold, or you're allergic to this and that. And then they put you on a treatment plan if you're a little older. I think as an allergy technician, most of the children that we gave shots to, they needed to be at least 8 years old. If they were not 8 years old and they were younger, we didn't give them any shots. We gave them medication and they monitored them. But if you are 8 years old, then they will start you on the process of shots, and you will come once a week, actually twice a week, and get your shots at the beginning, and then eventually you start coming once a week and get your shots. And you sit there for 15 minutes, just observation period, you know, making sure that anything is not going to happen to you and that you're not going to have any type of reaction. And after that is done, then you leave. I have had instances where I thought that somebody's going to die on me because a person will receive a reaction. And you know, it's always good as an allergy technician to have a strong sense of knowing what to do and when a reaction happens when somebody is taking these shots. And I was also exposed to doing desensitization, where somebody was allergic to medication and they needed to, you know, get that process going and and you have to give them a little bit of dose of that medication and put them to the point where they're not allergic to it anymore. So I had an instance where this girl totally went to an allergic reaction. She went to an allergy shock, and I looked at her, and her dad looked at me, and the first instinct that I had was to jump off my seat and take an epinephrine and give her the epinephrine, and it raised your blood pressure, and, you know, that's the reaction that you're looking for. The dad was asking me, what is going to happen to my daughter? And all you have to do is to remain calm and do what you have to do to, you know, get that person to survive, and give them 15 minutes, the time for the medication, the epinephrine, to settle, and eventually they start regaining consciousness. And eventually the doctor will come in and do what they have to do and so forth. So, but it's always a good thing to go through the process of doing allergic testing, going through the process of getting shots, or even just getting a regimen that will help you. And also with allergies, you also have to put in mind that if your child has allergies and they have other illnesses like asthma or like ADHD and so forth, you have to be on top of your game in knowing what to do, because especially with kids with asthma, comes to the point where winter can be the worst season for them because of those allergies, or it can be fall or it can be spring. It really depends what it is and how they react. So you have to get a handle of those allergies and do testing and making sure that your child is taken care of and the allergies are being taken care of. Which, Susan, kind of like bring me to the point of asking you, how can parents help children who have seasonal allergies? What can they do?
Well, you know what, I think you have to look, and in a lot of the situations that we have, Jeanette, there is never any gray area, but in not gray area, there's not any just set thing. There is generally a lot to the puzzle than one or two pieces. And that, I mean, if you take and make the step to go and have your child assessed, and your provider or sends them to an allergist, and they have determined this is the regimen that we want to have your child on, and this is the expected amount of time that you are initially going to be bringing them to the clinic or being engaged in doing this, and then gradually your child will be able to go outside without having such serious symptoms. But then when we take the child home, there's this home environment, and there are school environments, and there are different environments that the child could react to, and we need to be able to follow up with the plan as is outlined by the provider in our home, and then again in schools. Now, at home, we have different issues. It used to be where there were issues with, like, lead paint, and there were issues with things that were just so obvious. Now we have things with pet dander, and we have families who, you know, like to have the child exposed to the responsibilities that come with having a dog or a cat, and there is a responsibility in having a pet to make sure, especially if your child begins to exhibit symptoms of allergies, that in the testing process, if the provider says, you know what, your child is allergic to a dog or a cat, then a very hard decision has to be made. But if it is not the pet itself that is directly causing the problem in the child, then pet dander, mold, and dust, and different things that we have in our home environment is our responsibility to make sure that we're on top of that as well. Because we're only doing half of this puzzle if we're getting them assessed and getting them shots and taking them and they're being assessed. When they come back home, they're still in an environment that doesn't shut off. So when we get them exposed to different environments, we need to be aware of their environment. Now, as far as taking your child to school and being aware of that in school, a lot of things like that, I would assume, are outside of our control. However, I really do think that if we are conscious aware about making sure that when our child goes to school, they have medicines with them. That's in place. There are providers at the school that can give them their meds or can single them out if they're having issues and help them. And then when they come back home from school, the child, I mean, a lot of the research now is take and have your child change clothes, wash their hands, wash their hair. I mean, just take a bath, change clothes, because you get rid of whatever it is in the air at that environment and on the way home. So when you get into the home, then you're aware that, you know, this is going to be an environment that we have cleaned, or that this is something that we're aware of, and we're going to get rid of the whatever it is you brought home with you. And they advocate, too, making sure your pets are washed so that everything is, you're on top of it as much as you can possibly be. Now, I do know that we have two parents generally that are working. A lot of parents do not simply have that time, but we have to find a way to let something else go to take care of these things, because our children are dependent on us and we need to do that. As far as schools, like when your child goes to school and they have allergies, if your school does not have a school nurse, I would find out, this is what my son or my daughter's medical provider is suggesting we do for him or her, and how are we going to manage this in the event that they have a problem during school time. So it's not something that we can do away with, because as it gets warmer and it becomes much more beautiful and people want to get outside, children need to have sunlight and get out, and that's fine. But if your child is going out in sunlight and rolling in the grass or taking part in activities at school outdoors, then we have to be aware of that. And another thing that comes up is asthma. If a child already had an issue with asthma, and seasonal allergies can make it worse. So being aware of your child's medication, what are the expiration dates, when's the last time they've been evaluated, do they need to adjust their medications for asthma if they're taking a seasonal med? These are questions that a parent would have to pose to the provider, to find out what it is the provider feels is the best course of action. Parents that are not capable of purchasing meds, or they're having a slack time in getting the meds, other things are important, what have you, then we need to refocus on that, because asthma does have the potential of becoming worse in springtime and during seasonal allergies. So it is something that we have to assess that as well.
You know, it's interesting that you brought that topic up, because as I was working as an allergy technician, I had instances where a parent would come in with a child and say, listen, my child used to have asthma, but the doctor say he doesn't have asthma anymore. But every time during the spring season, he start having asthma again. And so we'll ask her, are you aware if your child is allergic to something? She'll say, no, my child is not allergic to anything. I say, have you tested your child in the past? No, my child hasn't been tested. So I would schedule the appointment and ask them to come in for testing. They will come in for testing and we'll test them, and then we'll realize that, in fact, their child is allergic to something that triggered the asthma each time. At the same exact moment where she say, okay, my child is my child is having asthma, they may be allergic to ragweed. Or something have changed in the household. Maybe they just acquired a pet and did not know that the child was allergic to the pet, and then the child start having asthma reaction every time. So we have to establish and let the parent know that, in fact, your child is allergic to your pet, or your child is allergic to this type of pollen, and this is what you should do in order for your child to live a better life and not have a trigger of the asthma. And from the moment they will realize that, and if they can follow the regimen that was provided to them, then the season will come and pass without the child having any asthma reaction. because of the fact that they have a handle on their allergies, because allergies are there to trigger asthma symptoms. No matter what you do, they are going to trigger asthma symptoms. So if you have allergies and you have asthma and you can get a handle of your allergies, then you will live a better life with your asthma as well. So it's something that is a relationship that we actually have to really, you know, let parents know that you have, if you have the illness, that you know that the illness can be triggered, that allergies can trigger that illness. You need to find out if you're allergic to, if your child is allergic to something. Because if you are unaware of your allergies, then you continuously be in a hospital, having your child hospitalized every week or every other week just because of allergy symptoms. So you have to keep that in mind and be able to do the things that you have to do to make sure that your child is healthy and that your child, you have a handle on your child, your child's allergies.
Absolutely. And when we were active duty, Jeanette, and we were in a location that was very poor air quality, and many, many, many families, military and civilian alike, whose children had very real allergies, not just to anything seasonal, but other foundational, or not considered foundational, but other allergies that triggered a worse response when it became a seasonal thing. A lot of allergists at that time were advocating, look, those children are so sensitive, they do not need carpet down, they don't need throw rugs down, they don't need a lot of cleaning supply, sprays and things like that in the air. You need to be able to keep the dust, be aware of things that could potentially mold situations, and be on top of mold, and just using water and wet cloths to dust your house versus a lot of spraying of aerosols and different cleaning products. Very, very regimented in what a household should or should not use in the event that a serious allergic reaction could occur. And there were individuals, families who on post, whose children had reactions so bad that it warranted, you know, a 911 response. And that meant that the ambulance was going to come to the home because the child was in crisis. And it, from there on out, and when that child's coming back to the home environment, I believe it all starts there. Once we have the child assessed and we know what they're allergic to, we have to start with the home and spread out. There are certain things that a child just cannot contend with. Now, we're talking about seasonal allergies, but sometimes other things make that worse as well. I do know that the allergists in this area where we were stationed at did not advocate strong perfumes and a lot of sprays. So those particular family members did not wear very strong, lingering perfumes. It would just simply overwhelm the child. And, you know, you can have the best intentions in that about taking care of your child, getting them assessed and getting a regimen and taking them. But if we're not willing to look at the whole puzzle and address the whole puzzle, then we're kind of sort of missing the mark here. So
let me add something. When you talk about perfume, for example, you enter the world of chemical allergy, because with chemical allergy comes all those products, those spray, those perfume, and so forth. So yes, the parents, for example, will decide that, okay, in my household, I am not going to use aerosol spray. I'm not going to do this. Or if I do use that, it's going to be unscented so that my child doesn't have to smell it. I'm not going to use this, and I'm not going to use this type of strong perfume, because if I do, my child can go into a crisis. Now, we need to come out of the house and look at the people outside, those who we encounter every day, all those people who wear strong perfume, who spray things all around you, and your child is exposed to that. So what would be the concept to saying that, okay, the people outside our homes also have to have a handle? How can we control that? I think it's not a way of controlling that. Maybe just letting people aware that, be mindful of others when you go outside and wearing those strong perfumes, and or be mindful of others when you're spraying around. Make sure that there is not a person around you that is allergic to any chemical, because me, personally, I'm allergic to chemicals. any type of chemicals. If you start spraying too many chemicals around me, I start coughing and I can choke to death because I just cannot, you know, stand the smell of it. So now getting to that point, I found myself somewhere one day where I was inside this bus, actually Greyhound. I was going to visit my mom, and so I decided instead of going to the hospital, getting a plane ticket, I just take Greyhound, just to visit and, you know, see the scenery and stuff like that. So I took Greyhound, and I was just enjoying my ride. And we stopped, and then the person came back in. I don't know what had happened to the bus because we stopped. We went outside. You always have to take, like, a little break. When we came back in the bus, something happened, and he put a spray, aerosol spray, all over the bus. I just could not breathe. I have to get the bus to stop. I say, you're going to have to stop. I need some air. I need something. I need to open the windows, do something, but I just can't breathe. And they realize, and then they ask the guy, they say, why did you spray? He said, well, I didn't know that somebody was allergic to chemical. And the funny thing is, I was the only person who, you know, voiced my concern about the fact that I just couldn't breathe. It was a older man next to me who was about to go into cardiac arrest because of that, but he just couldn't speak. So once they opened the window, when I said something, then his wife finally got the courage to say that my husband can't breathe, please open the windows. So they finally, he stopped the bus, he opened all the windows, and we had to change buses. Like, he went and decided, he said, well, passengers in the bus cannot be in that bus. We need to change bus. And we had to change the bus because I could not breathe. And I wasn't going to be going to emergency room because I couldn't breathe because of a mistake that somebody made, spraying chemicals in the car without asking if people were allergic to chemical. So they had to change the bus. So we ended up taking another bus and avoiding an emergency response. Because of the fact that I was able to voice my concern and say, listen, I am allergic to chemicals. I can't breathe. You need to stop. And at the same time, I was able to save somebody else's life. So I think people need to be mindful of the fact of their surroundings and the people around them that, you know, there may be people around me who are allergic to these things, and I should be mindful of that. I just wanted to bring up that point.
Oh, I said that is actually a very good point. It is a very good point, because just as we're talking about adults, that very same thing could happen to a child, and how does a child vocalize what they're feeling?
Mm-hmm.
They just know they're in distress, and all of a sudden they feel extremely bad, and if mom and dad is not nearby, it's up to someone watching them, observing them, to determine that they are actually having an issue currently. So a child cannot vocalize this maybe the same way an adult maybe, and we have to be aware. And I do agree that that is, while that is hopefully not something that happens all the time on a bus, Jeanette, but it is a possibility, you know, that
that kind of thing
can happen. Yeah, absolutely. So not taking the time to find out an excusable, probably never did they entertain the idea of doing that again because of that.
I'm not sure. They actually did follow. They were very nice there to me at the end because the driver asked me for my name and my email address, and I think corporate kind of like called me and followed up with me to find out if I was okay and so forth. So I just hope they're not going to do that. Like I told them, I said, you know, I'm thankful that I was able to save that older man's life and save my own life because, you know, if I didn't say anything. But that I hope that in the future they can be mindful of not spraying chemical in the car because you just never know who's allergic to what, you know.
Isn't
so hopefully, you know, they took my advice and strike. If not, then, you know, it is what it is. you can just do what you can do, you know. So
absolutely. I think, too, you know, Jeanette, I think we still have. I don't think all parents are negligent. I don't think all parents are not on top of it. I do think when a child has an allergy and they need medical attention, I would like to think that most parents are on top of it and they're taking care of their child. But you're right. It is a big world out there, and we have to understand how are we going to be able to live somewhat normal life if we have allergies. And then if we do have foundational allergies, what I consider other allergies, and the new seasons come in and they may get worse, you know, how are we going to manage this so that we can have some quality of life for ourselves, our family, our children? So I think I'm always advocate for getting your child or getting the person assessed by a medical provider and following that provider's advice. I would never give anybody the name of a med or other advice because the providers are there and have had the education and the experience and are better to state what a person or a child needs to do. But I do think that compliance is everything, and if compliance was an issue, we wouldn't have so many adults in this country who do not comply with their own medical regimen. So it depends on our perception. What do we deem to be important? And though true, seasonal allergies pass, they come, they go. And like you were mentioning, the whole intent and purpose is to get the child successfully treatment or immunized or have seen an allergist to where they can get through one entire season without having any kind of flare-up. Yeah. So that of itself is, you know, is admirable. That's what we want to do anyway, get them to where they're not having another flare-up.
I also think that we need to equip them because, like I was saying, to this incident that happened to me in the bus, parents need to be aware of situation like that and equip their children in knowing what to do if situation like that arise. I think that communication has to come to play. Parents need to communicate with their kids. They need to let them know that sometimes assertiveness is a very good thing to have. You need to be able to speak up and speak up your mind and let people know that I am allergic to something and I really will be, it will be great if you do not do this, so that my allergy will not flare up. So I think that parents need to equip their children in knowing what they're allergic to, number one, letting them know what they're allergic to, and letting them know what will be the triggers that can lead to them getting into an allergic reaction or allergic shock. So they, especially those kids with asthma, because children with asthma, if they find themselves in a chemical environment, and there are chemical sprays all over the place, they will get into an allergic reaction. They will have a flare. They will have a flare automatically. It doesn't matter because at some point those chemicals is going to obstruct their lungs and they will be unable to breathe and they will have an emergency response. So they have to basically educate them in knowing what and to do and what not to do. I think parents need to provide those tools.
And a lot of that has to do, too, Jeanette, with the age of the child. And we are seeing more families taking on that for other members of their family that are allergic to be able to have the child. And we have seen children step up to the plate and vocalize what they're allergic to or make 911 calls or go to extenuating lengths to be able to get help for somebody because they just have an awareness that something is wrong and that something needs to be fixed like right now. And you're very, very, very true. Depending on the age of the child, educating the child, they are the best person. In the event your child cannot speak, then we have to go from there. But educating the child, absolutely. I agree 100%.
Well, Susan, I don't know about you, but I think that we are due for a break. So I think we're going to take a short break and we're going to come right back to our listeners. Well, we just took a short break. We are back. And so, Susan, we were talking about allergies. But let me ask you something. How to manage outdoor activities with children and seasonal allergies? What do you tell parents? What should they do?
Well, I think depending on the age of the child, I think first and foremost, after they've been assessed and they have had a treatment or a therapy regimen in place, I think parents need to adhere to that, but they need to be able to give their child the time outside. They need to be able to engage in activities. Like I said, the research is coming out now, or some of the comments coming out now from reputable sources, simply saying that the child needs to come back into the house when they're done with their outdoor activities and change your clothes and take a bath and put on new clothes, and they can enjoy the outdoors, but they don't need to walk around in their home with the pollens and the different things that they have picked out or picked up rather along the way. The age of the bubble boy may or may not have disappeared completely, because there are children, I'm sure, whose immune systems are so compromised that they may be susceptible to many, many things. So that particular parent would be very hypervigilant to make sure their child is not exposed to something that could trigger a problem for them with a current condition. I do think that if it is something that will gradually decrease in severity over time, as, you know, when you get allergy shots, for a certain amount of time, you're re-educating your immune system over time. The same trigger or same allergen did not have a problem for you to the same degree, but it is a possibility that it could there. But it's still being aware of the pollen count. If you're aware of pollen count on the days that you're planning activities, if there is a significant change in the pollen count and it's much higher, then in order to participate, parents may need to make a decision on, do we attend it? I mean, first of all, do we need to be out and attend that? Because if we go with a pollen count this high, it could potentially cause a problem for you. If we do go, we need to have your medications on board. That means you've taken them. You take your medications as necessary, or your rescue inhalers if you think that is a possibility your child could potentially have need for an asthma-related medication. Being aware, I don't think that that keeps parents and children from the great outdoors. I just think that we need to be aware of our treatments and compliance with treatments and pollen counts. And then when they come back, take the necessary steps to get rid of the pollen and the things that we have picked up. Another thing, too, Jeanette, a lot of the current things that I was reading is that children who seem to have an exceptional sensitivity to various things and the great outdoors, these are the kind of children who may not get to roll in grass, may not be able to go play in different places where there is a lot of wooded areas because of potentially what is there. So sometimes it may change where we participate in activities, and pollen count definitely may change that we even participate in the first place.
That's true. But now, when you talk about all the things that parents need to do and take into consideration with regard to the pollen count and so forth, will you have any suggestion with regard to indoor allergies? Because we're talking about outdoor allergies. What about indoor allergies?
Well, I do know that when we were active duty, we were stationed in a place where it was a very high percentage of the population that were symptomatic simply because of the poor air quality, extremely poor air quality. We were also told, you know, we don't need throw rugs. We don't need a lot of carpets, a lot of thick, fuzzy things that absorb what's in our air. First of all, we made sure that we had specific filters in our air conditioners or in our heating units. These were a little bit more expensive, and they filtered our participants in the air a little bit stricter, a little finer, so that if we had a family member who was very sensitive, then a lot more of the particulates floating around the air were absolutely being sucked into the filter. So changing the filter, using a better quality filter, sometimes a dehumidifier will help in the household where a child is having problems. Being aware of dust and changing linens and washing sheets and washing clothes and washing pets and keeping things very clean and kind of sort of in that direction helps considerably. And another thing, we all have so many more conveniences than my grandparents had when I was growing up, air conditioners, that kind of thing. Well, if we're going to run the air conditioner, then we need to be aware of the type of filter that we use. But if we don't use an air conditioner and we prefer or in a location where we have the ability to open the windows and let the air come in and breathe in and out of our home, guess what's floating through the breeze? All of these pollens that are moving from plant to plant. Yeah.
Yes.
So one, if we have a child that is sensitive or we ourselves are sensitive, we may have to rethink that because now we have so much more floating around so that, you know what, if I leave the windows open all day and I have all this in and at night I simply cannot sleep and I'm struggling, I'm having problems because I have inhaled, exhaled, all day long what's floating in through the breeze. So we may just have to simply reflect on what it is our family members are allergic to, what they should and should not be exposed to. And obviously, the pollen count is high. You don't want the windows open, right? So we're just taking basic steps. Close the windows. You can use the air conditioner. Make sure that we, on top of the type of filters that we use, in our household, we actually use filters that have the ability to filter much higher or finer particulate. And so we have a better chance of not getting the same percentage in our home environment. We don't have a pet, but when we did have a pet, it was keeping the pet groomed. You know, if they're very long coat and a child could be sensitive to long hair or cat hair, we have to be aware of that. But even if they're not, I kept pets groomed and their long hair cut in the summertime and just simply trying to take and get into a routine that seems overwhelming at first, but if I take small pieces, get into a routine where we're living like this in this room or we're keeping it clean like this, we're going to take care of the air conditioner filters like this, or we're going to get a dehumidifier. We're taking the steps, and after it becomes routine for us, then, it will come second nature. And initially, parents may get a little overwhelmed about what they should and should not do, but I would just take it a little bit at a time. Basically, there's, wash child, wash clothes, wash linens, wash pets.
It's all about cleaning, Susan. It's all about cleaning. Or you are allergic to anything, especially if you have pets. Like talking about pets,
absolutely.
If you have pets, you have to clean after that pet all the time. And one thing I always tell parents, avoid letting your pet come into your child's bed because they are going to leave the hair there and the child is allergic to the pet and they are going to breathe through all that. So you have to make sure that you keep the pet outside of the child's room and that you keep the area where the pet is always clean. Always have to clean after the pet, especially if your pet sheds a lot. You have to make sure that you're constantly cleaning after them. You're constantly vacuuming after your pet. And you're constantly doing the things that you have to make sure that your child is not going to have a flare-up. Also, those windows we love to open. You know, summer is coming, season. It is such a good thing. It's a good feeling to have this breeze come through your window. So basically telling your parents you should have your window shut is basically asking them to live into this bubble. You know, there are air filters. If you have to open your windows, they have air filters that will filter the air that comes into your home. It's a lot of money, costs a lot of money, but if you can invest on that, especially if your child, you care about your child health, then you should invest into those type of things, especially if you love to open your windows. And they will, the filters people will come in and they make sure that your house although you open the windows, will have the ability to filter the air that comes into your home, and so that your child can still have a healthy environment. So, you know, parents should invest on things like that. It's a very good investment to have. Other than that, you should do the things that you know that are good for your child. Kids, especially children, they are always more exposed to having allergic rhinitis, which is hay fever, and especially if they have asthma. And it's mostly common in them because if they have asthma or eczema, they will have allergy rhinitis. So it is.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, another thing, Jeanette, parents maybe have a misconception that they think hay fever is because we have maybe thrown that term around for eons. You know, I can remember hearing the term hay fever when I was growing up. And I'm not going to date myself, but it's been a while. But I want to tell you, hay fever doesn't necessarily mean that I'm allergic to hay. I mean, it is something that we have to look at our perceptions. And you're talking, too, about wanting so desperately to open the windows and let the air come in. Because we as parents, especially if there's a significant age group, you know, age difference there, at my age, for my grandchildren coming in, I remember that we did not have air conditioning. We did not have this. So we had no choice. If it was warm, we simply opened the windows. Okay, so now a lot of houses have this one convenience. And it's kind of sort of, we didn't equate spring is here, and it is finally warm enough to where I can open up my windows. I do not need a sweater. And people long for that. But it is something now, our perceptions have to change in the sense that, well, I cannot do that now because I have a new situation. So we have to find other ways to connect with spring, connect with changes in nature as she wakes up and warms up. That doesn't directly affect ourselves or our children.
Oh, Susan, I'm looking forward to opening my windows. You just don't know.
Well, we lived when we were on active duty, and we had set roots down in a place where it was very poor air quality. We also lived along the coast, and they also had red tide. So red tide, periodically, you know, certain things would happen, and it would change the air quality as well. And I would tell you, once you have been through that, and you struggle through that period of time, you remember, you don't want to go through that. And when you see children, no, but when your children start going through that and your grandchildren start going through that, you're much more empathetic with them because I know what that feels like. I remember, and that's another thing, you know, if I remember how miserable I was as an adult, and I could tell anybody because I could actually vocalize it, our children may not be able to tell you exactly how they feel, where they hurt, what's messed up, and they're dependent on us. So being able to be aware of changes in your child, who knows your child best but you, right? And if there are changes, significant changes in your child, take the steps to at least take them to their provider and say, look, this is what's going on. I've been watching this for about a week, 2 weeks. And what do you think this could be? And then list some of the things that are new or that have changed in your environment or have not changed and take the proper steps so that ultimately not just you and your schedule, but your child and your entire family get to enjoy the spring and summer months with little to no problems.
Well, Susan, we are coming to the end of our show today live here at BBS Radio, but don't worry. We will be back Saturday, April 27, 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time and 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Before I exit, I will leave you with an inspirational quote and hope that you enjoy the time spent listening to us. When health is absent, wisdom cannot reveal itself. Art cannot manifest. Strength cannot fight. Wealth becomes useless, and intelligence cannot be applied. Hero feelers. Thank you, Susan, for being the best co-host ever, and I hope today's talk show made a difference. And for my listeners, thank you for tuning in. Until next time, have a blissful Saturday. Ciao now.